Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, producer extraordinaire. He is absolutely right. You're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network. I'm Jay Flanagan, everybody. Welcome back, fourth and final segment, and second segment of the show with our good friend from Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine and a multiple author, Kevin Cook. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Jay, how are you doing?
Doing great, Robert, just as well as I was doing all of about 4 seconds ago.
You were doing very well then.
Yeah, we're in good form. All right, everybody, so this is the, as you know, this is the time for the trivia question sponsored by JB's Best Hot Sauce. Spicy and bold and flavorful. By any chance, Kevin, have you had a chance to try JB's Best? It's made by a golf writer named John Burwa.
I'm going to get some tomorrow. My blood is now hot like that with nervousness about the trivia question.
Sadly, I've seen the question, and you've got every right to be. Okay, this one I rate on the scale of difficulty. I rate this one kind of hard. Okay, you really do have to know this one. There's no way you can stumble into it. So,
okay.
But here we go. Your category is TV shows.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Bart, Lisa, Maggie, Homer, and Marge, the Simpsons, all live in the town of Springfield, but what street? What street do the Simpsons live on?
This is a real problem for me, since I was not one of the fortunate intelligentsia who ever watched the Simpsons. I had some great conversations with Conan O'Brien, who loved them and worked for them initially. So I could have gotten Springfield. I could have gotten Homer. So if we're talking about the street, then the only street I would guess would be Main Street.
That's actually a pretty good guess. Nice try puzzling
it
out. But they live on. They live on Evergreen Terrace.
Oh well, Evergreen Terrace is not one that I would have gotten out of left field.
Yeah, like I say, that one's a tough one. It's not like you can stumble into that one by accident.
I'm going to buy the product anyway, and I feel better rather than having gotten it free. Now I'm going to really step up and purchase the product.
It's good stuff. It really is spicy and bold and flavorful. It tastes like a wing sauce in a bottle. And John Burwa was just such a good guy. You know, and it's so much fun to have him as a sponsor. And the trivia contest is a good time, too. Okay, I got a brilliant laugh the time Tom Doak drew Godzilla for a question, okay? He basically drew the question of naming two monsters that Godzilla used to fight all the time.
You should have given him the
question. Well, but it was funny because Van Morissette was on the show too. And here we go. You and I are both literary, and Rand's pretty literary too. We're all smart guys. We're all well read. We're all gifted writers. But I think we would all get this wrong unless you happened to know it. Would you have been able to guess correctly the nationality of Bram Stoker?
Transylvanian.
Well, no. That's a good guess.
That was a setting, at least.
One of the two settings, yeah. I would have guessed the other setting. I would have guessed English. So Rand guessed something Transylvania. He didn't guess Transylvania. He guessed Slovakian or something like that. But he was actually Irish, Abraham Stoker. And even that is a red herring, because if you happened to remember that Brahm was short for Abraham, you might have guessed Dutch.
Oh, yeah, not bad. And yet we all miss. But I used to eat a cereal. Bram Stoker's, which was a cereal for vampires.
I thought that it was Count Chocula.
That would be the one, yes. There's no Count Chocula without Stoker, and I bet he never got any royalties.
Now, I'm going to be heading over to Ireland, to Dublin, to be exact. We know that you obviously have been to the UK and done a lot of research in Scotland. How far is your expertise extending to the field of Irish folk?
Not much. You know, my experience in Ireland is mostly at the Dublin airport. And was actually there last year on Bloomsday and wanted to get out into the city but had to catch a plane. So that's one of my goals one of these days to know more about Irish golf because, you know, while my heart is in Scotland, I'd like to get my feet into Ireland a little bit more.
Well, let's do this then, okay? You and a bunch of your dear friends are going to go over to Scotland for 5 days, and you get to plan the itinerary. So map us out, Kevin, an itinerary that you take me and Rand Morissette and two of your other buddies, okay, who have, let's pretend that you're taking over friends that have not yet been to Scotland.
Okay.
And you've only got 5 days, so fire away. When we land, what do we do?
We play Prestwick first, because that's where the Open began. And we're on the west coast, and from there, we're going to go over to the east coast and basically play the new course. And then we play the old course, and then we play Old Tom's new course again, and then we play the old course twice more. That's the best you can do over there.
So the old course, the new course, and test with.
Yes, those are the ones that mean the most to me. They're not. It doesn't mean that the best courses are the only ones that travelers should play, but I used a couple of years of my life working on the book, and those are the ones that resonate the most with me.
Now, one other thing I like about what you did there is that for a really special place that's important architecturally, you really do have to go around at least twice. So it is nice to have 2 days at a place. You learn the holes a lot better.
That's for sure, because, you know, unlike Harry Vardon, who used to play the same course twice in a row, and the second time he hated it because he'd hit his ball in the divot where he hit his drive the first time around. I don't do that. But it seems to me that it's an utterly different course every time. So I think that's a good approach.
Well, they say Ben Hogan used to do that all the time. They say, I think it was, it might have been Carnoustie, or I don't remember for sure, you can correct me, but he looked at a caddy that he had and said, be sure to replace my divot, my tee shot's going to be there every time for 4 rounds. If I'm not mistaken, I thought it was the 10th hole at Carnoustie, but you can correct me if I'm wrong.
That sounds right, and of course Hogan is picking that up from Vardon, and every time we hear a similar sentiment from an accurate player, it just resonates all the way. It goes all the way back through the game's history. And I hope that's what Tommy's Honor will remind golfers of, that the history goes back to two founders, to a father and son, Tommy, and his dad, Old Tom.
Well, it definitely does. And that's why I love Open Championship Week so, so much. You know, I also was happy that you picked Prestwick. I wanted to see that all my life from the minute that I read about it. And there is no way that anybody should go over and miss that simply because they want to play all of the Open Championship venues. Okay, they all are great.
That's right, and I think it's left off. It's forgotten in a lot of American golfers' pilgrimages, and it must not be. Prestwick should be one of the main sites to visit for American golfers who play golf in Scotland.
it's important both historically, and it's still a ton of fun to play, according to what everybody says. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet, but I look forward to
absolutely.
It.
No, absolutely. No, there's crazy blind shots and a remarkable place to play.
Yeah, and you know, the nice thing about my listeners and the nice thing about the show is that nobody who listens to this show is scared of a blind shot. Okay, we all embrace it because it's only blind once, and it sure is a lot of fun when your playing partner points at a cloud and says, shoot at that cloud, and then you crest the hill, and there's your ball nestled closely to the hole because you trusted it and put a good swing on the ball.
That's for sure. And my ball is usually unfindable in that situation, but it's still a great experience.
So, Kevin, let's shift gears for just a little bit here. Tell us what else you're working on, and tell us where else everybody can read your writing.
Oh, well, they could check me out on Amazon. I've got 9 books. The 9th is coming out this summer. It's a baseball book called Electric October. It's another vintage sports book. It's about the 1947 World Series, which was an astounding World Series, the first televised World Series, the first integrated World Series, because Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier that year. But the book is really about several heroes of the 1947 World Series, Cookie Lavigetto, Bill Bevins, Al Gianfrido, who did remarkable things and were never heard from again. And it's really a study of how being a hero for a minute, as they were, changes the rest of your life.
You know, I'm so glad to hear that. You'll have to send me a review copy. And for all of my listeners, Kevin here has been a 2-time winner of my magazine's Writer of the Year Award for various books that he's written. One was his terrific book about the IMG Golf School down in Florida, and the other was his fantastic NFL formative years book called The Last Headbangers.
Well, that always meant a lot to me, and I sure appreciate it, and if I don't get to 3 on the next book, then I'm going to write another one and try to make it even better.
Now, Kevin, this takes us right back into trivia questions, though, because a few weeks ago, one of your books was the trivia question.
Is that right?
The question was, of whom was Raiders cornerback Jack Tatum referring to when he infamously said, man, he sure is in a hurry to get to the locker room?
I'm going to miss a trivia question about my own book. Was that Franco? That must have been Franco.
Yeah, it was Franco, remember? Jack Tatum had just laid out Frenchie Fuqua, and he told you in the book, he goes, yeah, I see Franco the running boy, and I said to myself, he sure is in a hurry to get to the locker room. And then I totally see Bill Belliano running by and snarling asshole at him, because as you know, they all said in the huddle, they all said it, knock it down, don't go for the interception, and don't go for the big hit, and Jack means you, Jack. And Tatum was like, stay there, knock it down, I got it. And I don't remember what it was, but yeah, go ahead.
I missed on The Simpsons, but I'm quite relieved I didn't miss a question on my own book. The interesting thing about Franco is, you know, Franco used to get criticized, Franco Harris, for running out of bounds instead of putting his head down and crashing into someone, and that's why Franco is still lucid today. And tragically, so many of his contemporaries are not.
Well, I remember that Franco was big and powerful enough to bowl guys over too, yet fast and nimble enough to make a miss. That's what made him so good, was he was that dual threat, you know, to have breakaway speed and at the same time to knock your ass over and get those extra couple of yards that might mean a first down or a touchdown.
That's exactly right. He always said that, he told me that He wanted to master the art of running and not the master of running into.
And I still laugh at the time that Villa Piano looked at the statue of Franco that's in the Pittsburgh airport and told Franco, one of these days I'm going to tackle that statue.
We're going to know, if that statue was ever knocked down, we're going to know who did it.
We'll know who did it. Plus, I also love how you told the story about when Villa Piano's kids went to Pittsburgh and met Franco, that Franco took them backstage, and when Villa Piano saw them an hour later, they all had Steeler pennants and Steeler shirts and Steeler stickers on their face, and they're like, we're Pittsburgh fans now!
That's true. You don't want to wave that terrible towel around Phil Villa Piano, but he finally he forgave his son after that.
Well, you also don't want to wave that terrible towel around any of the broadcasters for the former Houston Oilers either, because you'll remember, of course, when the Oilers were playing the Steelers in the AFC Championship game in 78, when they got smeared 34-5, and Bradshaw slid on his ass for 12 yards in the slush, that when the Oilers press box ceiling broke, okay, it rained all over the broadcaster for Houston, and he's like, give me something, give me something. And they started handing him terrible towels, and he screams out, get rid of those infernal rags!
You have a better memory of those days than I do, so well done.
Well, anyway, it's been so much fun having you on the show. Kevin, we'd love to have you on again as we get further on into the year. Your acumen about the tour is remarkable. I'd love to have some time to talk with you about the tour. And also, when the book comes out, we will be glad to have you on again to talk about it. Tell us the name of the new book, when it's coming out.
The name of the new book is Electric October, published by Holt, and it comes out on August the 15th of this year. And I'd always be pleased to be on your show.
And tell us where everybody can read your writing and where they can go to learn more about the new book.
Check out Amazon, although I always feel bad to say that because I love to support the independent bookstores. Your independent bookstore will also carry Electric October. And, you know, you can read some of my magazine work upcoming in Smithsonian Magazine and Men's Journal.
One of the true greats, everybody, in the pantheon of great sports writers. His bust is right there, too. Kevin Cook, thanks for coming on the show. Everybody, I'm Jay Fleming. You've been listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Network Radio Network.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Plays show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as the theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Plays show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.